The Team Never Quit podcast is brought to you by Navy Federal Credit Union. Partner with Navy Federal Credit Union to pay down credit card debt. Learn more at NavyFederal.org.
You should serve something larger than yourself if you have the ability to do it.
Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit. Team Never Quit Radio.
All right, everybody, welcome back to the TNQ podcast. I'm your host, Marcus Luttrell. Every week, it's my job to fire you up, to ignite the legend inside of you, and to push you to your greatness. Join me every week as I take you into my briefing room with some of the most hard-charging people on the planet. They're going to show you how to embrace the suck of life, teach you the values of working your ass off, and charge through whatever life throws at you. This is the Team Never Quit podcast. So buckle up, Buttercup.
Hello and welcome back to another episode of Team Never Quit Podcast. Before we get started today, I'm going to start us off with the Patreon question of the day, which is, if you were going to time travel, which time period would you like to go to?
Oof. That's hard for me. I feel like I should have been born in like the late 1800s, or maybe I'm still just very connected to an ancestor that was from that time period, because my interests are all very old school. I like to garden, I like to grow my own food, I like to do the canning and all that kind of stuff, so I'm very pioneer-like. I feel like I need to, if I was going to time travel, I would go back and live a few days in that time period.
It depends. Am I single or married?
Oh, here comes that rational brain. A whole bunch of questions. Are we allowed to do that? Because, I mean, that's...
If I'm single, I want to go back to the Roman era. I want to go start conquering on one side of the world.
And I'll tell you exactly the job I want.
And finish on the other. Exactly. Exactly. Exactly.
Yeah.
If I'm married, 1840s, 1850s, load up on a prairie schooner and take my family across and make my way.
Yeah. Head west.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, that's it.
What about you, babe?
I had an answer. He messed it up.
All rednecks have the same answer.
The same answer. There's something unique like about in the movies that we watch from 1955. Remember Back to the Future? Everyone always goes back to 1955 America.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Yeah.
I feel like if you could live in that time frame in America with our tech.
Yeah. Yeah,
that neighbors was, are still neighbors.
That was the coolest time period.
It was, right?
Absolute coolest.
The cars, James Dean, and all that
yeah.
stuff.
Oh, yeah.
The way they dressed, everyone even was in a suit, hat kind of deal, mm-hmm. man. Everything was everything.
So I feel like you would have been in like Alexander the Great's army.
Okay, I said if we were married, I'd
front line.
If we're not, then I'd have to go
away. That's why I started off single or married.
Yeah.
Single or married.
Like
there'd definitely
would
be a time frame where the fighting thing was going, the fight, feed, and breed thing.
Yeah.
Alexander would have been a good one.
Yeah. Like you're a real good one. One of his big warriors that travels on horseback with him. Yeah. Just slaying.
Slaying it.
Yeah. Wouldn't go as far as being a Hun, but I want to go visit him for a fight.
That's something that's real mean, dude.
Yeah, Jesus.
I mean, they're real mean.
Yeah, they weren't allowed to let an animal go through their lives.
Yeah,
they like killed gophers and stuff.
Dang,
yeah,
that's why they're so good.
It's like killing for the sake of killing.
I kind of agree. I would really like to be around that Roman era because of all the times that we've been over there. I mean, it's so easy to fall in love with just the history, how rich it is, and the culture over there is breathtaking.
Yeah, Hunter has traveled a lot in his life ever since he was, I think I took him to Rome for the first time when he was 9.
Nice.
And we went back as recent as this past June and many times in between. So he's gotten to see a lot of that part of the world. And it really is neat being able to actually like see the mm-hmm. history. So that is cool. The Rome stuff is really neat.
Mm.
What about you, John?
I would like to see, I think, ancient Egypt in its glory day.
Oh, yeah.
Who put the big one there?
Who put the big one there? I'd like to go back and see.
That's a good one.
Yeah.
Yeah, just to see that.
Just to see that take place.
But you and wouldn't want to be one of them that's actually building it.
Not the one putting it there.
Yeah, I don't know that that would be the best experience.
Like to check by and go, what are y'all doing with them big rocks?
Yeah.
Come back real hard, though.
Actually be a rock mover.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, either that or 1955, I think, as well. Because that there's this futuristic thing about that era.
You know how many different movies talk about that particular?
I know.
My grandparents were in their prime at that time.
Yeah.
So, like, my grandparents, both my sets of grandparents got married in 1955. So, that's, like, when they started their adult lives. So, anytime I hear that year, I always think of them.
Yeah.
And actually, my grandpa died yesterday, but there's this picture, his senior year high school picture, and he legit looks like Fonz, like, or what's his name, Fonzie or whatever. Yeah. He has the leather jacket with a white
t-shirt,
just plain old t-shirt.
White t-shirt.
Everybody did.
And he just looks so cool. And my
hair slicked back.
Yes, and
blue jeans and Chucks, man.
Yeah, both of my mom's parents and my dad's parents actually grew up in the same area, and my mom's mom and my dad's mom competed against each other in beauty pageants in high school.
Louisiana, like the towns are named after.
Yeah, so it's
like,
really
you can marry because you just go to the town.
Yeah, I actually have a picture of both my grandmas in a beauty pageant. And one of them won first place and the other one second.
That's fantastic.
And the town has been divided ever since.
You hit the genetic auto.
Isn't that cool? But it's that from that time period. Like those pictures were probably from 53, 54.
Wow.
And it's just those really pretty dresses that are like
tied
around the corset and then flow out.
Hey,
I just think that's so cool.
Great still. Christmas time, it's all lit up. And they had a freaking tank at the...
The military memorial has an actual army tank. But yeah, it's just a
what
great
town are we talking about?
Cottonport, Louisiana.
Okay.
It's a tiny anybody nobody knows about it.
Okay.
If you don't have family there, there's no reason to go. But I love it. To me it's a magical town, and
it's a town. And I think that's the cool part about 1955 is you still lived in your town.
Yeah.
Right.
Yeah.
The grocery not store, a city.
Right.
It was a town.
Yeah.
Town.
They actually call it a village. It says the village of Cottonport on the when you pull
it's
in.
Cool, man. The movie theater was in town. It's kind of like
the library. Actually, the library is named after my great grandma. She was the librarian for 50 years. So,
awesome.
Yeah. Anyway, so when I hear 1955, that's immediately where my brain goes.
Yeah.
If I'm time traveling, I want to go back further than that.
I see that. So. I think if I really had the ability to time travel, I'm going to have to answer that question about the pyramids and Egypt and
that's
the whole thing. I want to go back and see it.
Dang, so we were watching Lonesome Dove the other day. The boys in Texas Rangers back when that was.
Ooh.
How much fun would that have been?
Man.
For us, I mean.
Can you imagine, though, how the one single thing that nobody gives credit to back then is the weather.
Oh, bro.
Could you imagine?
Shit, all I know.
The norther that came in here a couple of months ago,
yeah.
When he just went like from, 60 to 5.
Mm-hmm.
You're out there riding your horse, this, that, and other. Oh, wind blowing.
I had that
it's
thought.
It's 5
that
degrees.
It's that chill out there when you walk outside and it punches you in the chest. Like you can feel that sucker, right?
Mm-hmm.
That
what
kind
about
of stuff?
When you had to go number 2? I feel like back then that would have been the worst thing. Getting on a horse, like
that's where the term steamer comes from. Man, you get that sucker out of there.
Exactly. And you know what? But you don't know what you don't know.
Yeah.
That young man, both you, can't imagine not having a telephone.
Yeah.
No.
Nobody. I mean, I'm 10 years older than you. Nobody, when I was growing up, could have dreamed. If you weren't Captain Kirk on Star Trek, that you would have something in your pocket to talk to somebody else with.
Oh, yeah, communicators.
I remember when cordless phones came out.
Mm-hmm, I do too.
Cordless. Just a cordless phone. It was like sliced bread. It changed the world.
Yeah. But, look, I mean, really, if you're lonesomed up, if you're in that time period and you've got to go number 2.
Okay, so that happens this time frame too.
It
when we're out in the field... If you're on a mission, you'd be surprised. You can go along. You can just drop trout. Yeah, just and if you got to go, you take care of your business.
Oh, I've been to Uganda. I know what it's like to be a little primitive.
Did you return after a run with half a shirt?
There you go. It's awful. I've done that. I'm just saying, like
half shirt.
That's it.
But living that every day would be so hard.
I mean, we need to put that down too. Like write that on the board. For board Wednesday, it's like here's how you get a couple things to get you.
Return from run.
No, dude, that's hilarious, man. I forgot the sock of the dumb.
Or only one sock.
Yeah. Yeah. They always joke that the dryer eats the sock. It's really
the sock. Yes, the dryer.
Gets
Wait a minute, hold on. That's top secret, man. We don't even know that.
Oh my gosh. Okay, never mind. If you find an old sock in the woods, do not pick it up.
Do not. Yeah.
Why do you think there's always the chip clips go missing and there's always one sock?
Right.
Gross.
That's awesome. And let me introduce our guest over here. Today we have one of our very good friends that we want to introduce, Sydney Blair. Sydney bleeds blue, starting his career in law enforcement, doing everything from SWAT, gang unit, detective work, switching over to Homeland Security as an air marshal, then retired, and now is back to being a cop. Sydney has lived a life of service, and we're very grateful to have him on. Welcome to the show, Sydney.
Thank you.
Yeah, thanks for doing this, man.
Glad to be here.
So, you know, we have this mix of guests on our show. Sometimes it's people that are very public and everybody knows, and then sometimes nobody knows who this is. We wanted you to come on because you do have an incredible story of just service. I mean, it really is awesome. And you just retired. Everybody had a big retirement party for you. And then... how long did that last? A couple of weeks and you're back at work.
Maybe.
Yeah.
Maybe
so
a couple of weeks.
If you can just start off your story of why you chose law enforcement, maybe start off with like where you came from, where you grew up.
Because people always ask too, when we're in the public eye and the high vis thing.
Yeah.
Like, who is that?
Yeah, who is that?
Who's that?
Where are you from?
All the time.
Yeah.
I'm from a small town. I was born in Navasota.
Yeah.
Navasota. So born in Navasota and, you know, was as a little boy, we lived in Huntsville, which was a big, big town to me when I was growing up because my father was in the grocery business. My dad had Piggly Wiggly, Minnie Max, Jiffy Mart grocery store. No, you didn't know that?
No.
Yeah.
You left that part out. I did not know that. The Piggly Wiggly thing is funny as hell, man. There's only one of those that I know of left in Louisiana.
It's in Cottonport. We have a Piggly Wiggly in Cottonport.
Okay, true story. My first paying job that I ever had, I was the pig in the 4th of July parade down Sam Houston Avenue in Huntsville, Texas, walking along with a big plastic deal on my head. Yeah.
Oh my God.
Do we have pictures of that? My dad paid me my grandma. That. I was like, let's go.
If you go to Mr. Hamburger, if you go to Mr. Hamburger in Huntsville, there are still ads that my dad wrote on the wall in Mr. Hamburger from my dad's Piggly Wiggly grocery stores in Huntsville, Texas.
Oh my gosh. True I story. Did not know that.
I didn't know y'all didn't know that.
There's also the fact that the gentleman that's in here now, we grew up together years apart.
Years apart.
Same location, same path. Years apart.
A couple of young men were the bane of my existence as patrol officer in Willis, Texas.
But you need to look at it from a younger, older brother perspective.
Right.
But yeah. I made it a lot easier for us. All right. That's Navasota than Huntsville.
Okay.
Navasota. Born in Navasota, you know, just because that was the nearest doctor to where my parents were. But I actually, where I grew up was the little town of Lovelady, Texas. I graduated from Lovelady High School. Graduated a graduating class of 30 people.
Yeah.
You know, little bitty graduating class, small town boy, rambunctious kid, basically the same way you grew up, you know, going out, pasture parties, doing all that stuff, working hard, playing hard. That's what I did. And probably my first, don't come from a family of law enforcement or anything like that. A lot of my family, of course, we lived around the Huntsville area, worked at TDC and things like that. Had a really good friend of mine who passed away a few years ago. His name was Eddie B. Hutchison. His dad, Eddie B., had been a DPS trooper way back in the day. I remember seeing pictures of him and stuff, and I thought, man, that's cool. I just like uniforms.
The troopers are great at that.
Mm-hmm.
Troopers are great at uniforms. They look great in uniforms. They look like a recruiting poster.
They're like Marine Corps.
Yeah, absolutely. Without question.
Them, I was always, we're taught to be scared of them. Them and the Rangers. When you see them suckers walk up, you're like, oh, shit.
That's it.
Like when they pull you up, to this day. Yeah.
To this day.
If you get pulled over by one of them, just say yes, sir, and answer the fucking questions. Yeah. Don't do anything else.
Yeah. When like Steve Jeter comes to talk to me, I'm still like,
Jeter, dude, that freaking guy, man.
I'm in the presence of Steve Jeter. Yeah, he's a Cal Ranger now.
Good for him.
He's a Cal Ranger. He's still at it. We'll get on some topics like that. But anyway, from Love Lady, Texas, the first time I remember I thought I might want to go into law enforcement, because I was a heather growing up. I'm going to tell y'all, when I had to do my top secret clearance when I was a fed, I'd have to do my top secret clearance every 5 years, and one of the things you have to answer is, what's something you did that you were never caught at, never convicted of, anything like that, but that might be a crime? I used to bootleg whiskey.
Bootleg
liquor. Houston County was dry, and I used to smuggle it in my truck.
I'd
smuggle beer and liquor.
We're right close to Bible Belts. At midnight, you stop drinking.
That's it. That's why at the Trinity County line, that's where they sold all the alcohol, because everything north of there is dry. That's where I grew up.
Yeah, at the Trinity.
God forbid, statute of limitations.
We had to get our asses and drive a long way. By the time you got there, you didn't even...
Yeah, you didn't want to drink anymore.
You didn't want to drink anymore. It's so damn long of a drive.
But anyway, I was coming back from Trinity. That's where I worked. One of my dad's grocery stores, the Mini Max. I was a cleanup boy in the meat market. I was coming back, and there was a girl that had had a wreck, and she hit a tree. She was kind of pinned in the car. I got out the first one there, helped her out, you know, did the right thing. I was, you know, because, of course, back then you could drive when you were 15 years old. I'm 15 years old in my dad's farm truck. Pulled this girl out, and it was a girl I went to school with. Her name was Melissa Wallace. Her brother is the sheriff of Trinity County right now.
Woody Wallace.
Yeah, he's the sheriff of Trinity County. Pulled her out of the car, asked her if she was okay, this, that, and other. She was okay. She was banged up. But she hit that tree. Her mom and dad got there. And they were like, oh, thank you so much. Thank you so much. And I was like, I'm driving along my old farm truck later on. I was like, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Feels good.
You know, it feels good to help someone out. Mm-hmm. And that was the first time I can remember thinking, man, it wouldn't be bad to be a cop. And then I thought, I'm actually kind of a criminal, so I probably should straighten myself out if I want to be the popo.
There's got to be a place for us.
Yeah.
So wait.
They found it, right? We found it. Yeah.
At 15, you were smuggling alcohol?
We call it smuggling. I mean, that sounds bad when you use that word. Bootlegging is a lot cooler.
Yeah, bootlegging sounds bad. Smuggling. Bootlegging in a 79 Chevy pickup with a 454 engine you had souped up sounds a whole lot better.
Yeah.
Okay, but you were like a little teenager. It's not like you were 21.
No, I was a kid. I started doing this like that. Like I worked in Trinity, and people be like, "Oh, you work in Trinity?" I was like, "Yeah." And they go, "Oh, you know so and so over there?" I'm like, "No, but I can find him." You know, and they'd be like, "Go see him, man. He got something for me." They'd give me like a case of beer, and I'd bring it back over there.
So we had to start driving at 15 too, and that was so we could get our old man's
whatever. 15 years old, because I lived 18 miles from the nearest city limit sign.
Oh, my gosh.
We lived down in the country.
Oh, man, we're smart, because at that age, if we got busted, then it'd be like, you know.
Yeah. You know what happened if you got busted?
We're just couriers.
They took your 15. Beer.
Yeah, they just took it.
They took your beer.
Actually, they wanted to catch you, so they didn't have to pay for it.
Right.
Oh, my gosh.
And I know that because we're adults now, and I know the cops.
And I'm a cop now.
I know those damn people, so I can say that. Dude, to take that from us. I never thought about it out loud before.
Yeah, but that's what I did. That's where I'm from. And from there, went to the police academy, knew that college wasn't for me. I went to both Sam and Texas A&M, but didn't graduate. I mean, I was terrible. I went to the Dixie Chicken more than I went to A&M.
Awesome place.
Yeah, and went to the police academy, started in narcotics.
That's literally what they called the police academy, was the Dixie Chicken.
Yeah. literally went into narcotics right out the gate. And then worked as I was what they would call now, after I did a little stint in narcotics, came down here and was what they call a school resource officer. I worked at the schools and stuff. You know, that's how I know Thornberry.
Yeah.
That's how I know Thornberry. He was one of my students.
Oh, my gosh.
I'm that much older than everybody. I mean, I'm 57 years old this year.
Oh, my gosh.
So anyway, went from there, Montgomery County Sheriff's Department, when I went to Montgomery County.
Yeah, but the way we kind of looked at it is like we had an older one of us with a gun.
Yeah,
in uniform.
That can kind of keep you out of trouble. Yeah, and the thing about
that was the best part, man, is you weren't total. Yeah, that's
this whole group of kids. They weren't all the people that surround Marcus and Mojo and that whole group of kids. They weren't terrible people. They were a little rambunctious. I'll never remember pulling up at a pasture party one night, and I don't know whether it was you or Mojo, but they were standing on this dude. I pull up. Everybody's sitting there. They put their drinks down. Because nobody has a drink in their hand when the cops pull up. They're standing there, and they're standing on a dude. And I'm like, damn. And they go, oh, this guy, he, you know, he slapped some girl or whatever, this, that, and what. And he had weed in his pocket. We threw that in the fire. You know, but they're just standing on the dude, waiting on the police to get there because he was creating a problem.
That
they
is
just
hilarious.
Solved the problem. They just solved the problem.
I could totally see that.
But that's what you did back then.
I thought for sure he was going to tell a different story.
No, that did happen. That did. Yeah, it was both. Like we, you know.
Yeah.
That's funny.
There was, but back then it was a different world. People handled problems, and once the problem was handled, it was over with. Mm-hmm. That's what attracted me to law enforcement. There were people that I arrested in law enforcement. There was a guy that I shot one time that I saw later on. And he was like, man, I was a bad guy back then and this, that, and other, and all this. And he was still locked up when I saw him. I mean, he's wearing a poop bag and everything. I mean, it changed his life. But, you know, he found some Jesus while he was in there and got off dope and everything.
Thank God, because I want to shoot your ass
like,
again.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly.
That's how we do it around here.
Yeah, it's a good thing I was a bad shot back then, because right? You don't want to run into me now.
Oh, my gosh.
That's kind of what drew me into law enforcement.
How do you get, so when you go through the academy, because it's different from the big cities to the country to how people think, well, you can't believe what they think about us out here in the country. The sheriff's still on a horse with the freaking, the posse and all that. But it's like you get selected. We have special units and everything just like everyone else.
Mm-hmm. I went to the academy. The academy that I went to was over in College Station. They had an academy over there. It was, they had instructors from different, it evolved into what now is Teaks. It's now part of A&M over there where they have a regular deal. But this was prior to all that. But you all go to the academy. In Texas, a peace officer is a peace officer is a peace officer. Yeah. Whether you're a game warden, a state trooper, or a city cop, or a county cop, or whatever, you have to go to a base academy. The cities have their own academy because they also teach you city ordinance and this, that, and other. But you all have to learn this base thing. It's kind of like when you go in the Navy. You go in the Navy, everybody goes to basic. You're going to go
exactly
to basic.
That's exactly how you went to. I want you to explain that.
Yep.
Most people don't know that.
There's, yep. Okay. You're going to go to basic. You're going to get your basic stuff out of the way. You're going to be the popo. You get your basic on. Back when I became a cop, they literally handed you a key to a patrol car, put a guy over in the passenger seat for about 2 days, gave you a key map. Do you remember key map?
Yeah.
The orange map.
I was great at key maps.
I was wanting to get one of those. Did they still to get those just to have them?
We still have some. At the agency I'm at now, we had a whole box of them. They just threw them away. I'm like, y'all got to keep one of those.
No.
Yes.
We got to get some of those. I'd rather hand my kid that and be like, figure this out, then I'll give you that phone.
Dispatch would send you out.
Yeah, is that how you got good at that?
I was so good at key map. Yes. I would... Like, even for my parents,
she can't believe it. She can find it. Makes sense now. That makes complete sense.
Key maps, for people that don't know what that is, because not every city had it.
Right.
It was literally a spiral notebook that had a map on every page, and the page was numbered.
Yep.
And you can go to the index, which...
Number and letter.
Yeah, which would tell you, you can look up by street or by town, and then you go to that page... And you would literally have to piece it like a puzzle where you were going. So you'd have to flip pages and paperclip them together of where you were going. And when I was a kid, my dad, I don't know why he did this, but he would make me almost as we would just be at home. There was no reason to do it, but he would make me try to find point A to point B. I needed to get, tell him how to get from point A to point B. I freaking loved that. So in my crew, I was always navigation. I was always the one.
I really was. Thank God, because I can't find my ass.
I was always the one. Like, I had key map, and I could find anything.
So you came in with a key map and a key, and you just went, and you're the popo. You do whatever. And what you do, what we did in, 1989, 1990, when I started being a cop, was, and I tell young officers this today, you did exactly the same thing you do today. Your job is to protect and serve. You go out to the good citizens of your county or your city or your state or your federal jurisdiction or whatever it is. You protect them from any evils that exist, including themselves, and you serve whatever they need. If they got a flat tire on the side of the road, or if somebody's attempting to ambush them out of the bushes, it's your job to handle that.
Mm-hmm.
That's it. It's simple. The rest is just paperwork. But in being a cop, and I love being on patrol and stuff like that, but I always wanted a little bit more than it offered when something cool came out. Like, I'm a gun guy. I like guns a lot. And, you know, I saw we had a SWAT team. And I'm like, oh, I want to go do that with them guys. And I went to SWAT school. I signed up to go to SWAT school. And I went to SWAT school. And I remember the very first day I went in, the guy's like, man, you ain't gonna make it through here. I'm like, oh, I'll make it through here.
That's the secret word.
Yeah.
Yeah, and that was it. You know what the guy said to me?
As soon as they say that to you, that's it.
And you're gonna make it through here. I'm like, what do you mean I'm gonna make it through here? No, you're too fat. I was like, let's see about that, buddy. And I did. I made it by the hair of my fat chinny chin chin and learned to get in shape after that. Because I'd been out of the academy long enough that a lot of police officers will become calorically challenged. They stretch that old belt gear a little bit. Mm. And I had done that. But I learned that that put me in shape. Anyway, my career path led me. I was a patrol officer. I became a supervisor on patrol. I went to SWAT. I spent most of my career at Montgomery County Sheriff's Department on the SWAT team, which at the time it was an overall special operations group. Yeah. We had negotiators. I went to FBI negotiation school, went to sniper school, went to gas school. I was everything, all those things. Again, talking about running together, and I end up in a training facility in Lake Corinth, Mississippi, called Mid-South Institute Self-Defense Shooting.
Great school.
Shaw's Place.
Freaking great school.
So man. I'm at Shaw's Place, and the first time we roll down there, and there's a set of SEAL teams down there.
Yeah.
And I'm like, got to be kidding me. And that's where I started running into some of the team guys. And again, not, you know, we just started, you know, this person, you know, this person, you know, this person. And when I would train and go to schools, and I got to instruct different schools at HK and all over. I've instructed for Def Tech. There's various things that the military and the police are, even though the posse commandant, and you can't, you know, the
that's the one thing right there. That's one thing.
But you still run across each other. You know what I mean? Knew some of those guys, started running across some of those guys and stuff like that. The special operations of police, such as SWAT and things like that, have so much kinship with special operations of the military. We would do the same thing. I mean, when they come down to train, we'd play op four for them and vice versa.
You do the exact same thing back in our town. Like,
That's it.
Tell these young kids coming up, like, I mean, and the great part about living out in the country is you get to do the big city things. They send you there.
Yep.
So you get to hang out in the city and meet all the city boys, and you come back and live in your town to do what they sent us overseas to do. And it truly is. If you think you get respect by bullying somebody and keeping them in fear, that's one thing. If you strap up to protect them, you can't believe what that does. If you give the kids like we had at a young age, you get to see it just for a glimpse, just for a because showing them fear, that takes a long time to condition a kid to be mean to keep that going.
Right.
It doesn't take very long if you show them the cool part, like we were taught. They'll want to do it, no matter how tough it gets, because there's something that goes with it.
Fear is forced. Respect is earned.
Yeah. Right.
And I'm telling you, you know, you asked me earlier, when did I first get into law enforcement? My entire life, I've detested bullies. Detest bullies. I don't care if it's a mean guy on the block who's bullying other people on the block. I don't care whether it's somebody in the household that's bullying family members that he shouldn't be. I don't care if it's one of the most powerful men on earth that is bullying one of his staffers. I'm going to not tell the story of when I was a federal agent, but believe me, I don't put up with that either. I detest bullies. I do not like bullies. There's no place for them in society.
Mm-hmm.
That's just my belief. And I believe as police officers, our job is to stop people from bullying other people. If there was no bullying in this, and I'm not talking about the bullying where he touched me and made an offensive gesture in my direction or something like that. I'm like truly using your power or whatever it is to make someone else do your will and they don't want to.
Mm-hmm.
I hate that.
Yeah.
Hate that.
Two of the best ones to hunt down.
Yeah.
I feel like to me, the best police officers are the ones when they see an 18-year-old boy walking down the street, they pick him up, give him a ride.
Absolutely.
If they're going in the same, if they're going down the same route, just say you need a ride. Or like you said, you see if someone with a flat tire, I had a flat tire one time, actually recently in the last 3 years, on the freaking highway, and called my little OnStar. They said they would send an officer. The guy just sat in the car. He just, for the, like, so the traffic wouldn't, he just had his lights. No. And I'm like, come on, help me. So then they had to send somebody else to come and actually change the tire. I'm like, what's, I know this guy can change a tire. But yeah, community service is part, to me, is part of being a law enforcement.
It's all of being law enforcement.
I can't remember if you telling me this, or this is a while ago, but I've used it a few times on stage. They were talking about, it was at the academy, and they were doing the training, and it was raining outside. Someone was like, man, I don't like being in the rain. I was like, I get that. There's a type of human that doesn't.
Right.
That doesn't make you a bad person. We have one that wants to be a cop and will stand in the rain.
Mm-hmm.
We're going to use that one.
Right.
No offense. Right? That kind of deal? People get bent out of shape when you go into any of these places and you don't, it's not that you don't qualify. It's just like, hey, man, we got something designed for this.
Right. Mm-hmm. There's a place for you. This is just not
one,
it.
Not only will you be happy, everyone else will be happy.
Right. As a police officer, in the back of my patrol car, and I'll tell you how varied, and this is just my opinion of how a police officer should be. In the back of my patrol car, I have extra ammunition. Of course, I have extra guns. I have extra body armor. That's in case I have to rescue someone, and I have strapped body armor on people before and ran out of houses with them because we were taking fire from a house next door. Mm-hmm. That's why I carry extra body armor. Everybody's like, oh, you got more body armor? Yeah, I got more body armor because somebody else may need it one of these days. Mm-hmm. Something else that I carry tools. I carry a jack. I carry an electric impact wrench that I can change people's tires with and stuff like that, because your job as a cop is protect. It's simple. It's protect and serve. Somebody breaks down on the side of I-45. If you're broke down on the side of I-45, and you got a carload of kids, or just you and a friend, it's not that you don't have the ability to change your tire.
It's dangerous.
It's the fact that I'm 6'1", I weigh 250 pounds, and it's easier for me to change the tire than it is for you. And common courtesy dictates that I change your tire. Plus, the government is paying my salary. You pay taxes. So my job is to get out there and change your tire.
Yeah.
There's ones that want to do that.
Yep.
Like, drive around looking for shit like that.
Yep. Mm-hmm. And if you don't want to do it, I was a field training officer for a long time here in Montgomery County. If you don't want to do it, police work is not the job for you.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah, we got something, though.
Yeah, they can go somewhere else.
That thing's shifted. We got all kinds of units now.
Well, you know what? It is what it is. I mean, I was on SWAT. We had SWAT because you have to have a specialized unit. You've got to have somebody who comes in when the police can't handle what it is.
Mm-hmm.
I mean, we had a little short story. We had just the other night. I now work for Walker County Sheriff's Department, Huntsville, Texas. We had an issue the other night. I won't throw any names in or anything like that. We had an issue the other night where an individual had just spun off, went to left field. I mean, just crazier than Charlie Melton's dog. he was way spun off.
Damn, I'm going to use that.
Exactly. Exactly.
How long have you been sitting on that one?
Since about
you delivered
second,
that really smooth.
Since about the second time I ran into that dog, I use it quite a bit.
This dog has literally popped every ball I've ever bought for my kids.
Hey,
that's great, Charlie.
So
freaking love you.
I was at an event and they auctioned off.
Holy shit!
Seeing that
I
dog
just left
jump
there when
up,
you did, when that happened,
jump up and bust all the balloons. Yeah, bust all the balloons. That dog was busting balloons 7 feet in the air, jumping, and just having the time of his life.
Oh, and anyway. I just tore into his ass about that, too, Charles. Yeah. He goes,
it's like you're not going to break him from it if you train him to do it, you knucklehead.
Or keep
every
him in a kennel.
But he went through every one of those things, too.
But, dogs take the personality of their owner, so there you have it.
Yeah.
Isn't that great? That's what you did with Charlie. Yeah, that's exactly what that is.
I ran a rabbit trail on that. But anyway, this guy had And the guy had some weapons, some serious weapons. And he had decided that he wasn't going to jail, that he was done. And he had saddled up on an elevated position, and he had enough weaponry that he was going to do what he was going to do when the police showed up. Police got called there, and I literally got on the radio and went, no, do not go there. I stopped in a location far from there. I jocked up, got all my gear that I carry, because I carry serious gear. I got all my serious gear that I carry, got a thermal, got night vision, got all that stuff, got out there, crept up, took me a while to get up to the house, got in a secreted location where he couldn't see me no matter what he had, trained to do what we do. See the guy's head. There he is. He's armed. I'm armed. I'm seeing what he's fixing to do, this, that, and other, and all this. You know what I did? When he made himself known, when he was encroaching on where he thought those other officers were, called out to him. Sheriff's Department, put your hands up now. Had he not put his hands up now, he'd have been done. Mm-hmm. He would have been done. But he put his hands up. He gave up. Smart of him to do so, because he'd got cut down if he hadn't. But police have to have that. Police have to have the ability to call that. I happen to be the guy that had that ability that night. Mm-hmm. That your regular cop coming out. That's why SWAT exists. That's why SEALs exist. Mm-hmm. The Navy's great. The Navy's great at a lot of things. Big Green Machine is great at a lot of things. Your military's great at a lot of things. There comes a time when you got to call a specialized unit. That's why SWAT exists. And because of my history that I have and the training that I have, the years that I had on SWAT, I'm able to do some things at a small local agency that can't afford that kind of training. They just can't. They can't put $1 million in somebody.
Yeah.
That's why I went to work there. That's why I chose to go to work there, because I want to – I still have some fight left in me. I still want to serve my community. I still want to help the people that need help. And that, my home, where I'm from, I mean, I patrol the area that you grew up in. You know, Four Knots Road's in my area.
I know.
My God.
And still, my kids are on the ground.
Exactly. And but they don't have the ability to hire someone or bring someone in with that kind of training and stuff, because they're not. But there's guys coming back from overseas. There's people with that kind of.
Oh, they already have it.
Mm-hmm.
That have that kind of ability to do those kind of things. And since police now are up against those kind of things.
Oh, that too.
Yeah.
Oh, hell. That's a completely.
We can't.
Yeah, yeah. That's a completely different topic altogether.
Yeah.
Man.
I mean, when you get somebody with a skill set out there, you got to have somebody with a skill set to
take them down.
Yeah.
And you can't believe what y'all brought, what we brought back with us.
Yeah.
So are there programs for like veterans of special forces to be able to integrate into law enforcement when
and
they
for
get
the
back?
Younger communities, yeah. Like they can't afford it? Is there enough revenue up top for the big ones that can just suck those guys in there for like if you bone them? Absolutely no, they come from a department.
Man,
two dudes.
I'm going to tell you, if you're looking for big money, you're not going to get it at a small department.
No.
It just is what it is.
No, I got that. Because of that, shouldn't they just be able to come in and do the sign up for it and?
You'd hope, but a lot of guys, I mean, if you're a full-time SWAT guy, you work full-time SWAT job in this cool department, you get all the neat stuff, and you got AMRAPs, and you got all this kind of stuff. Yeah, you're not going to work at, you know, Mayberry.
That's when we go out there, that's where you drop all that. It's like, where's your stuff?
Right.
I broke it. But when we went to Mayberry, we dropped it off, because they needed it. That's what we always do to
exactly.
That's why you want to
work
with
them, too.
Get
it.
That's the only way they can get it, and they learn, and we hate going doing that.
I mean, around here. You know, I'm gonna toot your horn a little bit, okay? Hurricane happened. Hurricane Harvey happened. Whole world is collapsing. Everything is flooded. There's no way to get around anywhere, or anything like that. What'd we do? Got on the phone. Hey man, what are you doing? You able to get out? Yep, we're able to get out. We're going to get a big truck.
We were having fun doing.
We were having fun, but to us, it's fun.
That was a blast.
To those people, it's the end of their life. We all saddled up in a truck and went and drove down. And went and drove
everywhere.
Around. Every barricade, everything. Marcus is in the front seat. Marcus takes my federal credentials and holds them out the window.
That's the best.
Federal
dude.
Agents, we need to get through. Federal agents, we need to get through.
Don't count that part, man. Yeah,
true
okay,
story.
Yeah.
True story. That happened.
Dude, it was so
that happened.
Much, we had a blast.
But we go downtown and help out whoever we can help out, because these guys are here. They have the ability to do rescues. They have the ability to help people to do things that the city or the county or the village or wherever can't afford to get that kind of help. You just can't. There's programs for small cities to get, you know, people look at it and they go, oh, they don't need these military things in here and this, that, and other. Okay, 99% of the time you don't. But the day you do,
Jack,
you do.
Especially if you got the qualified people living in there. Like, yes. If you're men and women that have the quals, you might as well have it sitting in there.
Yep.
worst case scenario, if something happens exteriorly and you want a soldier to have his gear.
Right.
Gotcha.
Right. That's a whole different thing. But that's what I bring to the table. When I went to, after I retired, I was working at Montgomery County Sheriff's Department, and then 9/11 happened. 9/11 happened. A couple of the first phone calls that I got, I will never forget the morning of, everybody's got their 9/11 story. Morning of 9/11, I was dead asleep. We'd had a SWAT call out. We'd been out till like 4 o'clock in the morning. My wife calls me and she's like, I don't know what happened. There's a plane hit a building and I think we're at war or something like that. Again, turned on TV, saw the second plane hit. Boom. Didn't know the world was going to change from there. Started getting phone calls from a lot of people that I knew in special operations. Stuff like that. Hey, what are y'all doing? Because we're, you know, the police special operations people, the SWAT teams are. And what are y'all going to do? This, that, and other than all this. People started, there were a lot of ideas out there right after 9/11 to make things safe. Because they grounded all the planes. All the planes, they go to the ground. Nobody's flying anywhere. There was a lot of things out there. But one of the ideas they had, they were going to put SWAT team members sitting in the front in the jump seat. Just sit somebody there with a gun. SWAT team, military, whoever you can get, somebody to make things safe. World's got to move. People got to travel around. From there, somehow it evolved into a couple of guys call me up and go, hey, man, they're putting this program together. It's called Federal Air Marshals, and it's going to be highly trained folks flying on planes. We'd like to have you. There were 300,000 people who applied for those jobs. I got a phone call before the applications came out. There were quite a few of us that did. Other guys that became federal air marshals, that I'll throw their name out, you know, Chad Robichaux, Craig Sawyer, Norm Hooten, this is my safety, sir. Those guys all became federal air marshals right after 9/11.
Oh, sure.
I was one of that group of guys. Now, a lot of them went back to their old life real quick when things weren't bad. But that's what we were doing. We were putting together looters and shooters to put them on airplanes and to get it moving around. So I was one of those original guys that came in. That was going to be my next service. I was in the middle of my police career, highly successful. I was a sergeant on the SWAT team, had all that in a bag of chips, two little kids and mom at the house. And I'm like, hey, guess what? I'm going out here. Don't know what I'm doing. Don't know where I'm going. You've heard my wife say it a million times. Where are you going? Classified, I can't tell you. Everything I did for 20 years. Hey, Dad, where are you going? Can't tell you. Classified, I can't tell you. I couldn't tell anybody where I was going, what I was doing. I could tell them after I got there, because you didn't want to compromise the mission, because the missions of United States Federal Air Marshals are classified. I know now these days people talk about a lot of things they shouldn't talk about, stuff like that, but you were never supposed to tell anybody where you were going. You were never supposed to tell anybody what you were doing. The gun you carried, where you sat, anything like that, everything deeply, deeply classified with the air marshals. That attracted me. I went there, became an air marshal, one of the very first ones, then became an instructor. I instructed the other air marshals coming in and stuff like that, and spent, you know, 19 of my 20 years strictly at the air marshals, and went over at the very end of it. When COVID happened, everybody got pulled back. I did the majority of my career was spent either training other air marshals or as a counterterrorism operative overseas, flying on planes wherever. I mean, you get on a plane and fly for 17, 18 hours one direction to Sydney, Australia, or to Lagos, Nigeria, or wherever, and then you get, maybe there's something to do when you get there, maybe it's not. Maybe you're just flying around. Or I got on a plane in Houston, Texas, and flown to College Station.
My gosh.
I mean, you know, you never know. There was no boredom.
Yeah.
But did that, and then just before that.
So, there somebody, when you're an air marshal, is somebody actually giving you your flight schedule, or are you mapping that out?
No, you get a schedule. There's an operations plan.
How
it's scheduled and all that stuff. It's classified as to how it's done.
Sure.
But you get a schedule.
You know how tied in that has to be to move operators like that?
Yeah.
God, yeah. You know
the cool thing? If you look up when air marshals started.
Everyone just thinks that's that one deal. When you hear that, people have this conception that it's like that's a one thing. That's not how it works.
The original air marshal program were called Sky Marshals.
Right.
They were started by John F. Kennedy, and the line item budgeting that came in at the exact same time as
we did
the Navy SEALs.
Exactly. Oh, really?
Yep.
So, If you ever, if you're an air marshal and you see someone that you believe is suspicious, do you have a way of just reporting them if they didn't do anything on the plane and you're like, just kind of flag this person for future?
Yes. It's classified, but yes.
Yeah.
And they also can communicate from the air, you know, before anybody else could communicate from the air. We had some really, really cool stuff that we could use that was like air to ground communications and stuff like that, and all kinds of.
They spent a lot of stuff. We got all the tech. Think about this: as soon as we got hit, all tech resources shifted to us.
Yep.
As soon as that, think about that.
Yeah.
And they opened up the door, the golden cruise box, golden conics box, whatever.
Yep.
That means something to all of us. The golden mill van. Each one of those men, when they open that up, means what do you want? And if you got an idea, we can get it.
As a gun guy, my job, when I was an instructor up north where we trained air marshals in the advanced air marshal training, my job was, because, you know, there were a bunch of instructors up there and there were different jobs. Who wants this job? Who wants this job? You can kind of pick your job if you're good enough to. And I was a really good shot. I've been a firearms instructor for a long time. I'm, you know, suffice to say, I'm really, really good with a pistol. And they're like, yeah, there's a pistol range out here and it's shooting the steel range. And I was like, oh. I'm your huckleberry for that, buddy. I'll stand there and shoot steels all day long. First day, they came out there with a skid steer and pulled up with a 55-gallon drum and put down a 55-gallon drum of Speer Gold Dot ammo.
Dude, that's so much fun.
And they were like, yeah, there's going to be classes come through here and y'all are going to shoot this today. And every day, they brought me a 55-gallon drum full of Speer Gold Dot ammo. A Sig Sauer P229, which they don't carry it anymore. I'm just saying it's not classified anymore. A Sig P229 in 357 Sig will spit out about 60,000 rounds before the barrel literally burns out in the gun and the bullets start tumbling. Because I did it time after time after time. Sat there and shot guns and taught other people how to shoot guns for a living. We were magnificent. Like you said, the Golden Conex box. They opened up the cash register and said, whatever you need. And when the air marshals were put together, it was absolutely the highest level of training with handguns that exists. Our standards were second to none.
Oh, look, we got to shoot.
And it, huh?
Yeah.
Man, the reason why we do that for y'all to listen, why would you put that much effort into that kind of shooting is like, because where you got to shoot.
Yeah.
You're surrounded by civilians.
Where the gunfight goes down is in a container up in the air.
Yep.
With civilians around, so.
Yep. 187 feet long, full of people.
If you got a line full of dudes shooting at you, the air marshal is the last one you want shooting at you.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm. Yeah, yeah. The air marshal standards, the standards, firearm standards for the Federal Air Marshal Service is the highest that exists. There's no other federal agency that has the handgun qualifications that they have.
Space Force might have it.
Maybe. Who knows?
Who knows?
Who knows? It'll be laser, yeah, laser guns, right? Though. Laser guns.
Holy shit! If you get on that detail. If your ass is still rolling when Space Force, I'm going with you.
Yeah. Okay. Yeah, that'd be cool.
To bring some levity to everything, I just watched Bridesmaids 2 days ago, and one of the funniest scenes in there is when the girl's next to who she thinks is the air marshal. I thought that scene was so freaking funny.
Do you know who he is in real life?
It's her husband.
It's her husband.
Yeah.
I didn't know that.
Yeah, it's her husband.
I just found that out.
I think that's one of the funniest scenes. And it made me actually think, like, I wonder if Sydney has ever had an experience where someone's, like, called him out.
When y'all start, absolutely. When y'all get deep.
Someone said, are you an air marshal?
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Absolutely. Absolutely.
And what do you say?
You know, everybody had their story. Everybody had their story. A lot of people had the shut up story. Like we had one guy that would tell him he was a drug dealer.
Oh my gosh.
And they would just stop talking to him.
Say something that they don't want to know anymore.
We had other people and they're like, why are you sitting in first class? I have some sort of disorder. They can't figure out what it is. And I'm going to try to get treatment for it. People just quit talking to you.
Oh my gosh.
So you don't have to worry about it anymore. We have other guys that are like, what do you do? Well, I'm in the adult entertainment industry. What do you do?
Oh my gosh.
Into that conversation.
Recruiter.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah, I'm a recruiter. But yeah, I actually had a guy. I had a guy who recognized me from being a deputy sheriff in Montgomery County.
Oh man, that's like some.
And it was in New York.
That's like some Donnie Brasco shit there, man.
Yeah, I get in the plane, and he's like, hey, man, what are you doing up here in New York riding in a first-class seat? And I'm like, I don't know this guy from Adam. I'm like, yeah. What are you talking about? He goes, man, you're a cop. I go, I'm not a cop. He goes, yeah, you're a cop. You're a cop in Conroe. I'm not a cop in Conroe. And he pulls his hair back like this and goes, yeah, you are. You did that to me.
Oh, my gosh.
I had arrested this guy years ago.
For the rest of my life.
And he had resisted somewhat, and I used a piece of available equipment to use as an impact instrument, and he deserved it. It was one of those guys that he told me the story, and I remembered it after he told me. He was in a big old fight. We were trying to pull him off. He turned around and hit my buddy. I tried to pull him off again. He wouldn't come off. Tapped him with a light. But after that, he quit drinking, got straight, stayed out of bars. Yeah, saw the light.
Yeah, you know when you saw the light. It's called being straightened out. When you see them do this number, when they straighten their body out. Yep.
Oh,
yeah,
my gosh.
But, I got recognized on the plane more than once, would get on. You know, everybody in the world knows, you know, my family and stuff. And there were family friends that had got on before, and they'd be like, I forgot I can't tell anybody. Yeah. And they'd literally, in front of everybody, go, well, I can't tell everybody I saw you. And they'd be like,
I can't believe what comes out of our towns.
Yeah.
Like these little surrounds.
Yep.
Lake Conroe, Huntsville, that whole. Which, for those of you who don't know, in Texas, that's our prison. That's where we keep the row, mm-hmm. death row.
Yep, that's it.
So if you get brought up in there, or you get schooled in there,
yeah. I think air marshal is such a cool job because you just don't meet a lot of people that are air marshals, and nobody ever talks about that. So I think that's just
there's such a very name. Very few of them, and it's kind of humorous that since I've been a real cop again twice, we've dealt with people that went, oh, I'm an air marshal, and the guys that are deputies on my street will go, really. Mm. They'll bump me on the radio. Hey, come over here. Such.
Hey, how you doing? There's probably man? 1 degree of separation with y'all.
Yeah.
Has to be.
If one.
If one. Absolutely.
Yep. And I immediately know when they call. Just like if somebody calls you and goes, hey, I met so-and-so. He said he's a Navy SEAL. And this.
You can usually sniff it out, but yep. If you can't, then.
I pick, you know, we have a little text message that runs around me, him, Mojo, mm-hmm. You know, Brad, all of us. I sent out a message one day.
Flies on that thing.
I sent out a message one day and I said, hey, man. There's a dude that says he was a Navy SEAL and he was recon, and he was Special Forces, I mean, and all this, that, and all this.
It just comes in.
He and Mojo immediately called me. Don't jack with that dude. I'm like, you don't even know who he is. Oh, I know exactly who he is. They knew what I was talking about before I ever said the name. Said, yep, guy's legit. Don't jack with him. He would kill you like and that. All your friends.
Oh my gosh.
We had another one like that the other day. I was running the traps on him. He was a Nightingale.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
I think I tried to call. I mean, I tried to call everybody. And finally, one of the Rangers hit me back. He's like, don't know how it's possible. Dude's legit.
Yeah.
That's all it said.
Yeah.
Yeah.
They show up, man. Some of them, they're just like.
But yeah, air marshals, they're here. I mean, the thing about it, they're retiring like crazy right now.
Mm-hmm.
There's a lot of them that are retiring. Because, again, it's a 20-year career. And it's a hard career. It's a hard career. They spend a lot of time in airplanes. The air marshals do a lot more than just fly on airplanes, though. All the Joint Counterterrorism Task Forces have air marshals on them. When you see, they're part of the Viper teams, the Visual Intermodal Protection Reaction teams that stay at train stations and airports and stuff like that. They're standing around in body armor, you know, sometimes long guns, stuff like that. Those are air marshals.
Mm.
The air marshal program has evolved. And when I left, because I left, I had 20 years in about 5 minutes. It was during COVID and stuff. They had transferred a bunch of us over to the Secret Service and gave us just a real quick down and dirty school. Hey, all of a sudden you're going to go over here. And I literally, when I went over to the Secret Service, you know, federal agents are federal agents. I didn't realize Secret Service did this, but they have what's called, they used to call them OTAs, other treasury agents, that during times of buildup of agents, they would call in from other places. I didn't know that happened. When I went over to the Secret Service job, I immediately went over, and my first detail was we were at Kamala Harris's house day one.
I remember. Oh,
they sent us over to their house.
I called you when you were doing that.
Yeah, because he called me. He goes, hey, dude, we're going to come up here and act like we're rushing in, make you look good. You tackle us and stuff. I'm like,
oh, dude.
No, bro.
I got the word.
No.
Bro, where are you at? He's like, I can't tell you. I was like, you're there. I knew it.
During the campaign, we're coming down here to Houston or whatever, and he and Mojo are like, dude, we're going to act like we're rushing in there, and you can tackle us, and you'll be a hero and stuff. Dude, don't do that. Don't do that. No, it's not like the movies.
I was going to come in, Mala.
No. Don't do that. But anyway, finished up after the election and stuff. Everybody kind of went back to where they were. I went back to the air marshals from my detail over at the Secret Service. When I was detailed at the Secret Service, I was actually actually sworn as a deputy U.S. Marshal out of the Southern District of New Jersey. I still have those credentials for that. Yes,
yeah, nothing's cooler than when we do interop. We eat that up in the teams. Yep. I mean, like with the DEA, sometimes the guys like
just get a little.
We'll say the line.
Yep.
Pulling up to order something at a fast food restaurant. Let me get a Big Mac, and I'm DEA motherfucker. You know, we would live it up.
Yeah. Yeah.
No one thinks y'all's jobs are cooler than we do, especially when we get to play with y'all. Yeah. I mean, we just own that.
But from there, and I was Secret Service with the Secret Service. I never went through agent school, but I was with the Secret Service on that detail during the run-up from the campaign through the election up to when they had the inauguration. When they were inaugurated, I went back to the Air Marshals.
Oh, so let me tell you what happens if you run into somebody. So they have the Secret Service detail, and then they'll pull us in. We're the bastards.
Yep.
So if you run into a bastard and start talking shit, they'll whip your ass. Because they're not a part of the whole crew.
No, who are you? Secret Service.
But we'll damn sure, exactly. Yeah. Who are you with? Secret Service. Make sure you say that.
See this pin?
That's true. That's a real thing.
So it's similar to like when in the SEAL teams, like when someone attaches, like does a deployment.
Yeah,
that's just
like it.
Yeah, same way.
Just like strap hangers, attachments, bastards, whatever you want to call them. Yeah.
Exactly.
That's so cool.
It's and real retired, cool. Retired. And one day I'm coming home from work and I show up at my house and why are all my buddies over at my house? And Marcus and Mojo and everybody has me a retirement party. So I have a retirement party. From the Air Marshals.
That he didn't know about.
That I didn't know about.
We didn't know that he didn't know.
They even flew a buddy.
Hey, how about that? We didn't even know that he didn't know he was retiring.
Flew a buddy of mine in from Albuquerque, New Mexico, that I was on a team with 20 years ago, that flew in just to come to my party. And the whole time I'm sitting there going, man, this is so cool. All my buddies are here and this, that, and other. How do I tell them I'm not actually going to retire? I'm just going to another job.
But did your wife know?
Yeah, of course.
Okay.
Of course. She knew. She knew. She knew I was going to go do something. But I just decided, you know, I wanted to finish strong, get about, I don't know, 5 years in as a street cop. Cause like I said, I still got, you know, I'm 57 years old this year, but I still got a little fight in me. When I went and applied to be a police officer, I know guys in that department that I've known that are the head honchos. I know the sheriff, the chief deputy and them, known them since we were kids.
We all grew up together.
I didn't tell any of them I was applying. I went into the guy who was doing the applications, had no idea who I was. Walked in, handed him my resume. He looked at me, and I remember him looking up and going, are you fucking kidding me?
Yeah.
He looks at my resume and is like, what the hell are you doing at Walker County Sheriff's Department? I said, I want to be a patrol deputy. And he goes, okay. And I went through the whole, you know, they have the testing procedure where you got to run, jump, do all this, go through the academics of it and this, that, and other. I went in, bunch of young, you know, hot kids and this, that, and other. Went in about, you know, I don't know, dozen or so of us. Starting off, the end of the day, it's four people standing. I'm one of them. I went through the whole qualification of everything. There's guys
that better doing it that way.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
You don't want to be that dude who rolls in and just kind of...
Didn't want no pull. Shit, didn't want nobody. Nobody.
Start at the
now,
bottom.
The one thing I did do is on my background, when you're calling my friends, so I put down on here, Marcus Luttrell, Morgan Luttrell, and all these other, like... You know, Brad Thor. I mean, people that were somebody, you know, senators and stuff like that.
You wouldn't
that.
Believe our crew.
Yeah.
It's so damn diverse. We got a writer in there,
yep.
a congressman, a cop,
yep.
thug.
Yeah. A couple of those.
I mean, it's hilarious.
Yeah. Diverse friends.
That's,
But anyway, when they look at that, of course, there. So anyway, I go to work for Walker County Sheriff's Department. I'm a patrol deputy. Love every minute of my day. I mean, I'm excited to go to work.
I mean, we live in paradise, so I mean,
yeah, we do.
There is
we
that.
Do. And I love rolling around, literally riding around, helping people. That's my job, man. I ride around and help people out. That's what people look at police officers as. You know, you look up in the rearview mirror and you go, oh, shit, there's a cop. Man, cops are out to help you. Yeah. The real cops.
Y'all don't teach us that because every time I look in my rearview mirror, I see the same thing.
I do the same. Dude, I do the same
thing.
Side windows,
I don't say that. If you're in the rearview.
Yeah, been a cop for 30-something years and I still, oh shit, that's cops. But you do, man. It's the best job.
Y'all should put
ever.
That on the front windshield of the cruisers.
Yeah.
Oh shit, it's
cops. Oh shit, it's cop. Yeah, that'd be cool. Yeah. But I love it. I love my job. I love every second of everything that I do. I couldn't ask for a better job. It will be, it will be very hard for me to step away from it. But the day that I step away, I'll close that door and I'll be done. I'll be done. And I have made the deal with my family because I missed a lot of family time growing up. That when my grandkids are old enough to know what's what, I'm not missing anything.
Oh yeah, check. Well,
not
sure.
Missing nothing. Not yeah. a thing.
Yeah. And you're right though. It's driving around. I remember when we get out of school to get off work, we would get in the vehicle just to drive around. It's so cool out here.
Yeah. And now you get to drive around and you got a gun and lights and something goes out on the road and you never know from minute to minute what's going to go on.
Like the game guys, they get to
The radio
they get a
goes
boat.
On. Yeah. Oh yeah,
dude, some
man.
Of the guys got the coolest toys.
They do,
man.
They do. Like a game warden.
Join the military.
If I could,
stupid.
I wasn't in a position to be a game warden. I needed to be a real cop, a regular cop, because if I'd have been a game warden,
same.
I'd have stayed
been,
in trouble.
Man, I'd have been in trouble all the time.
I'd have stayed in trouble.
Like the real redneck kid. Actually, probably the half-ass redneck kids. I mean, you can't. Like some, we couldn't do that.
Game wardens have the most power out of any, don't they? They have.
It's like the barefoot driving law. Everybody believes it because you hear it so much.
But
in Texas, a peace officer is a peace officer is a peace officer. They don't have any more rights or privileges than anybody else does, other than they can ask you for your hunting license.
And they can walk up on your land like it's nothing.
They got to have probable cause to do it.
An
you
animal.
You can't just openly, you got to be, it got to be hunting season. They can't just, like there was the old legend way back when that they can go in your house and open up your freezer and check for whatever any time of that.
That's I always thought. Yeah, like they can
they
just
will.
Come on in.
That's where that comes from.
Oh, I'm going to tell you.
Don't try and test them on it.
I'll throw a secret out there. I actually had a bet.
Yeah.
I've had a bet with people before. They're like, you can't get in whatever if they don't tell you you can get in your car and whatever. I'm not going to violate nobody's rights, but I guarantee you I've been doing this over 3 decades. I can figure out a way to do what I need to do.
Yeah. Look, there are levels, too. Each one of those standards. You hear something about a certain type of officer here in Texas. I don't know anywhere about anywhere else. Mm-hmm. Just there's something to it. And that's from our Rangers all the way down to our game guys, to the troopers. Man, they're just.
You learn your job and figure out how to do it. They're just really, really good at it. But you can't just willy-nilly decide I'm going to walk up on somebody's property and check them out.
Yeah. Well, I love that your never quit is that even after a 30-year career, you're back. You started at square one, and you didn't do it just by pulling a card. You actually went through the school, and you did all the things like you were just a brand new guy off the street.
And that's what I know that even, I mean, I may run in here and go, I got 30 years, whatever. Because I hadn't been a street cop in 20 years. I needed some training to do that, and I trained myself back up to do it. I went through a little supplemental police academy.
Oh, well, that was the difference.
In my spare time.
Yeah.
But I came back and went because when I, again, because the air marshals is a pretty exclusive little thing. When you're an air marshal or any kind of federal agent, when you retire, buddy, they are standing out there with buckets of cash looking for you. Mm-hmm. The NFL, the WWE, I can't tell you the jobs that I turned down. Big, big six-figure jobs. Come do this. Come do consulting. Come do this. Come do this. No. I want to go be a street cop. I want to start at the bottom, and I want to work my way up because my true belief, and I'm, like I told you, I'm the last of the true believers. You should serve something larger than yourself if you have the ability to do it. There's people that don't have the ability to do it. They don't have the training to do it. They don't have the opportunity. I do. And I truly believe that every community deserves somebody to give back to them if they've gotten something from them. Like, I've heard the story from you and your brother about what your dad told you. You are going to serve this country in some way. You should do the same thing to your community. If you have the ability to serve your community, I know that when Hurricane Harvey happened, you guys were out there giving out clothes mm-hmm. to people. Being a cop is no different from that. That's all I got. I don't have anything else.
Yeah.
I got being a cop. Being a specialized cop, being a very experienced cop. But
it's a natured thing, too.
Yeah.
Ability. You said I hadn't heard it said that way, but that's right. Because you can get in, you train that up, but it's also it's in your nature.
Yeah.
And some people don't have the right for whatever reason. You try to do a job because you think it's cool because your mm-hmm. buddy's man, but there is a difference.
Yep.
So will you be sheriff one day?
No, absolutely not. I've been asked that 1,000 times. If you ever see my name,
Morgan's
Well, hold on now.
I'm telling you never.
Well, I'm holding. Just don't say. Morgan's a freaking congressman. What are you right. talking about, Sheriff?
But you know what? He should be. He is the most qualified for that job.
And you should be the sheriff, right?
No, absolutely not.
If she's saying that out loud.
Why would you not want to be sheriff?
If you ever see my name on a campaign sign, it's graffiti. I promise you. It is graffiti. I will never. There are some people that have.
It'll be written like that.
There are some people that have skeletons in their closets. I have my own graveyard. I promise you. No, I'm kidding. I have no ambition whatsoever to be any political figure of anything. I like being a leader. I like training other cops. I like helping people out. I feel that I'm very good at what I do because I'm not political. I cannot be political. I don't have to be politically correct in what I do. I separate right from wrong. It is, laws are black and white, but there's a huge gray area in the middle. Mm-hmm. My chief deputy, one of the best cops that I know, I'll throw his name out here. His name's Tim Whitecotton. Tim Whitecotton has been at Walker County for 32 or 34 years. The same agency. Started there when he was a teenager. He and the sheriff both started there when they were kids. But he told me something, and it was probably the most accurate thing I've ever heard about being a police officer. If you have never stood before a man with a badge and handcuffs, and he held your freedom and your future in his life, in his hands, and he gave you a break, and you knew what a break you got, if that's never happened to you, you ain't qualified to be a cop.
True.
Which is to be the roughest, toughest images we got.
Yeah. When it's time to be rough and tough, you also got to have a soft spot.
To get in there.
Yeah.
Well, that usually happens to those guys.
Well, like, you have to have a moral compass. I mean, you see so many things like what's going on right now on the news with the cops that beat up that young man. Like
going to prison forever.
Yeah, oh, that was fucked.
It was so effed up.
They're going to prison forever.
What the fuck?
They were not. I mean, I'm a hand-to-hand combat instructor, okay?
Well, that's why I pissed off because of that. Dude, I saw that.
We fought before. Fuck. I mean, we've wrestled on the floor and this, that, and other, and all this. I can hold my own with anybody. There was those guys right there. They were not looking to take that guy into custody.
Did you see them?
From second one, I'm telling you, they were not looking. And I have had a number of conversations with young deputies. My department, there's young deputies that I work with that are in their young 20s. And they were talking about, you know, I don't know what to do and this, that, and other, and all this. And I said, you know what? This is what you do. You see someone get out of hand, I don't care if they're in uniform. I don't care what kind of star, bar, bell, or whistle they got on their collar. You pull them off. You physically remove them from the scene. You throw them in the back of your car if you got to. But you save them from themselves. Everybody's going to go a little far at some point, but you got to know when to back off. You are not judge, jury, and executioner. And you sure are not going to use another human being for a punching bag. I don't care what they did. Whatever the guy did in the beginning, there's nothing he could have done to deserve what they did to him. And anyone who does what they did under the color of office, they should be executed in town square. That's my belief. And I would say that to their face. No one that I know of, no man or woman who ever became a police officer ever had in them to do what those men did to that other man.
Whatever had them jacked up like that?
Mm-hmm.
I mean, you were talking about like rabid dog status.
Yeah.
You know how hard that is when we're in that kind of... Do you understand what has to happen to us to get to that?
That wasn't their first rodeo.
Yeah.
How do you weed out It has to be hard.
The academies and our life has to be hard.
Yeah.
You either have a standard or you have no standard.
Dude.
So does that lie within the leader of the police department or the sheriff or whoever they're working for?
There's a field training. There's an academy, okay? And the state of Texas does a very good job. There is a you will do a psych test to be a cop in Texas. There's an actual psychological exam that you go through to be a police officer. I would submit to you that police agencies, all law enforcement agencies, they have a culture. They have a culture. What is acceptable in that department? In that department, what is acceptable? Even in that unit, what is acceptable? A psychological exam has been done. They've been trained in the police academy. But when they go to their department,
that's different.
And especially when they go to a specialized unit, it's going to have its culture. Okay.
SEAL Team
5.
The Scorpions?
Scorpions.
Look, when you're taking title and a name on something,
that's it. You become a culture. SEAL Team 5 has a culture. SEAL Team 4 has a culture.
Damn sure
SEAL Team 3 has a culture.
The Sixers have one. Everyone does.
Yep. Gold Team, Black Team.
And
everybody
act like that.
And they act that way. They act that way. Punisher Team, you know, anybody. You go the 100%. Army Specialized Units, you know, Delta has they have a culture. They have a culture of whatever it is. That unit, that Scorpion unit, it was Street Crime, whatever, Prevention, acronym, whatever it was. It was called Scorpion Unit. They were a specialized street crime unit. I used to work in the street crime unit here when we had in the mid-90s when gangs were, I mean, I'm talking about when it was Bloods, Crips, when it was gang banging, drive-by shootings, AK-47. Boys in the Hood. I mean, this was... We rode around listening to Snoop Dogg, Dr. Dre.
That's when that was going down.
I mean, this was I'm telling you, it was the day of the game.
Riots in California.
Exactly. Riots in California. This was not too far post Rodney King days, but I worked in a specialized unit. You cannot act like the people you're after. Mm-hmm. And that's what those guys did. When the very first, I know there's the initial traffic stop and then the guy ran from it and this, that, and other. Not justifying the guy running from the cops, okay? But that cop gets out from the time they exited their patrol units. And this is an unpopular point of view with a lot of my fellow police officers. From the time they exited those units, they were out of hand. They were screaming, MFing people, pointing guns to them, fucker, don't let me do this. Fucker, don't, you know, every other word, this, that, and other. You can't do that.
Something had to have been fired up, man. Something.
That's what I'm saying.
Something's missing.
They were not the right people for the job. You know people like that. You know people that... Look, dude.
It sounds like they were just sitting at. I don't know. I haven't seen anything else, man. I don't know nothing about it.
They're shoving a gun on somebody's head. I'm telling you right now.
I don't know.
Be the guy wanting to take me into custody that runs up and puts your steel against the side of my neck. Mm-hmm. Buddy, I'm fixing to end you.
The bad situation.
You better hope I just get up and run. But I'm just saying, those guys didn't have the attitude. They didn't have what it takes to be a cop. And they are a stain on the badge. Anyone who does anything like that. There's cops out there that make mistakes. But my son, who is a police officer, said it best. He said that is a lack of leadership. Mm-hmm. Somewhere within the ranks of that agency, either that specialized unit or whatever it is, it became acceptable for people to do things they shouldn't have been doing. And those guys didn't care. I mean, that's their body cameras that you're watching.
Yeah,
you're watching their body cameras and the cameras out of their car. They knew they were being recorded when they did that. They beat a man to death and recorded evidence against themselves of them doing something horrible to another human being. That's not acceptable. We can't have those type of people being cops. I'd rather be 50 cops short on the street than to have one guy like that on my, or gal like that on my police force.
Yeah, it's so hard because it's making it even more divided. There's this huge...
No doubt.
Just culture right now.
Oh, we're definitely going through something.
Of like this anti-cop movement and... We have to have law. We have to have law and order.
Those aren't cops. Those are criminals with a badge.
We have to have the good cops that, like you said, will pull over and change someone's tire. Mm-hmm. If they see someone walking down the street, give them a ride. Or, you know, someone stranded in a parking lot, help them out. An actual community servant.
I will tell you this. It sounds like I'm recruiting for them. But at Walker County Sheriff's Department, that's what we do. That's what we are trained to do. That's what we do. We had a kid that came through field training that was a nice guy. He was a nice guy. Didn't have a lot of motivation, this, that, and other. He didn't make it through field training. And he was like, I don't really want to do that. You know what, man? Go to work over here. You're going to work in the jail division or in the courthouse division or in the transport division or something like that. Something where you're not out on patrol or something. But just because they're not at that, you know, I've known cops that have gotten themselves in trouble because they take an attitude to work. They get mad. They're confrontational the minute they meet with people. When you walk up on a car, when he approached that car, you're trained as a police officer to do what's called a seven-step approach. Hey, how you doing? My name's Deputy Blair. I'm with Walker County Sheriff's Department. The reason I pulled you over is because of your excessive speed and erratic driving. Is there some reason you're driving like that? Yeah, no, maybe. I'm going to give you a ticket or give you a warning or help you out. Maybe you're trying to get your wife or your friend to the hospital or something.
Mm-hmm.
You know, maybe there's a reason for that, but I give you a reason for that. When I jump out of the car and I'm like, MF this and GD and gun in your ear and I'm going to mace you. Don't make me tase you and boop, boop, boop. You know, boot party when you get on the ground.
What the hell is your damn problem? Pray to God you better be here. What's going on in there? It better be something cool.
You don't. That's not a police officer. No police officer. Countless times. I mean, I put people in handcuffs who shot at me. Actively shot at me. Dude who shot me. I've arrested people like that. You can't bring that attitude. You are to protect and serve. You are a servant of the people. Mm-hmm. You've got to help them out. You've got to help them out.
It's so hard because you hear all this bad stuff and you see that kind of stuff on TV. But we know so many good cops like you and like the constables around here. Sure. They're so awesome. They're just good human beings. A lot of the guys down in Houston, I mean, we know a ton of really great law enforcement. And it's like we want to scream from the rooftops. There are good cops.
There are. And everybody knows there are, but people feed off of bad news.
Yeah.
People feed off of bad news. You know, if it bleeds, it leads.
Your attention.
Yeah.
That's
the shiny object.
Well, you're taught to look at it. Well, do we need to pay attention to it? That kind
of, they look at it and then they're like, okay, get rid of all of them. I hate that mentality.
One thing that I hope, and I saw this coming 20-something years ago, when you start lowering stuff, like I said in the beginning, you either have a standard or you have no standard. When you start lowering standards to hire people because you want to check a box for whatever, you know, we want a bunch of females, or we want a bunch of this, we want a bunch of this, or you want a bunch of whatever. Hire the most qualified people. I don't care what they look like. I don't care who they are. I don't even care. And I saw something that said, would a college education stop this? No, not at all.
Yeah.
Not at all. It wouldn't. I have nothing against college education. I admire those who have a college education. You know, if you have a doctorate, good for you, man. You're way smarter than me. That doesn't make you have the intestinal fortitude that is required to serve other people on that level.
Yeah.
Yeah, because that degree doesn't apply for what you're trying to do.
No. Or it might. If it does apply for it, that's great. You can be in a command status. You know, you can be a lieutenant, a captain, or whatever.
Or you can see them. You recognize them immediately when they get into any position, especially at the lowest rank. They're like, man, they'll work their way through. That's a thing. That's what that place is designed for, to see who does what, and pressure does that.
Yeah.
Or you can wait, let them through, let them get into the real scenario where that pressure won't come off, because our civilians don't fuck around. Yeah. Our Americans, they don't mess around, dude. They know the law better than we do, if not better. Right. And, you know, it's just, better.
And we have people all the time. I mean, you go out to a noise disturbance or something, you're at a noise disturbance, you're like, hey, man, you need to turn the music down. And somebody recites to you, my music is not off my property and over 85
decibels. The decimal point is, I have a registered
right. Yeah, I have a decimal meter and this, that,
and
that.
In the house.
Yeah. Okay.
All right, you. Roger that.
But still, you know what public intoxication is? Because, buddy, you're fixing to go to jail if you don't turn your radio down.
Oh,
we're standing
gosh.
In public street. You know, there's always a law around the law.
But they're great. Our people are
civilians
great, man.
Civilians know the law as well as you do. You gotta enforce regulations within the bounds of those laws. I can sit here and say that I have never, in my law enforcement career, have I knowingly, intentionally violated the civil rights of anyone I've ever arrested. And like I said, I've had conversations with people I put a bullet hole in.
Mm-hmm.
You know, I've had life and death struggles with people who later on became acquaintances of mine. Not saying I'm going to be friends with them, but acquaintances of mine. I mean, I see them. It's a small town. It's a small town. You're going to run into people. Here we sit right here.
Yeah.
A kid that used to be at pasture parties, you know, when I was a young patrol officer rolling up. I mean, I could have come out there swinging a baton and spraying mace on people. And you kids get down. You know, you don't do that. Hey, man, y'all got ride home? Don't get in a vehicle if you've been drinking. Be sure your parents know where you are. Be sure your girlfriend's parents knows where she is, you know, and all this, that, and other, and y'all keep it down. Have a good night.
Don't make me call your dad. Don't make me take you home to your old man. I know, because the sheriff, that's a problem in our town. The sheriff been around. They knew my father and my grandmother.
Yeah, that's it.
See you in church.
Yeah.
You know, he's like,
don't make me, because I'm not going to take you home to your daddy. I'm going to get your daddy out of bed, make him drive up here and get you.
Oh, my gosh.
Whip our ass.
Yeah. And it'll be on for you. And the worst thing in the world that we can get, those people, and I don't know anything about those people that did that, but the worst thing in the world that we have is the breakdown of the nucleus of a family, that people don't have upbringings where they learn to respect other people. I mean, what those people did, something like that, or just merely, you know, the way people treat people nowadays.
Yeah.
You know, I was talking to somebody the other day. There was a big fight went on. We went and broke up the fight and stuff. Remember back in the day when a disagreement started and ended with two people having a disagreement, you get in a fight, punch each other in the mouth a couple times, and it's over and done with.
Yeah.
Now it turns into a melee. Everybody runs in there. I mean, our buddies would be like, hey, this is one-on-one.
Yeah.
Let them get it done. Now everybody runs in there and sucker punches people and beat them up and kick them while they're down and stuff like that. And what happened to our society? I mean, even in disagreement, we can be decent to each other.
It's like, because kind of there was a time frame when the whole just sucker punching, just you couldn't do that anymore. Like, there was no fist fights anymore. There was no solving it with your fist.
Yeah.
It was like timeout. You know, you got put in timeout at school or whatever. Or you get in school suspension or whatever it is.
I didn't, and my kids didn't. I promise you there was.
But
no,
I'm talking about like right after our generation.
Yeah.
So right after we graduated high school, it kind of turned into that. Well, and then your people's aggressions there's that fire inside you. You sometimes. Guys like this just have to get out aggression.
Soft time builds soft people.
Well, and then it's like, well, if I'm going to fight, they have to do it in groups because they're scared. It's like they're fighting out of fear now, not to solve a problem.
And they all look like they miss leg day, too. Yeah. Little skinny people and they're slapping around. Dude, don't know how to fight.
Videos when you see them swinging the bat at the windows. You ever see somebody that swings the wrong side or they don't know how to do it?
Comes out, knocks them in the head.
I mean, they're dressed part.
Yeah.
They look great. But when they go to do their action, if you know what you're looking at, you can see it. You're like,
Yeah.
But I would, you know, people hunter's age all the time ask me, you know, oh, I want to be a police officer. I want to do this. I want to do this. And I'll ask them, why do you want to get in law enforcement? They say, oh, well, y'all make good money, don't you?
No.
That's the wrong answer. Actually, law enforcement today is pretty fairly compensated.
Yeah.
They it's not back in the days when,
but that's not why you were
a government
nobody.
Assistant. Exactly. That's not why you go in.
Yeah.
Law enforcement, like the military, like, and I would say even the priesthood, it is either in you or it's not.
Mm-hmm.
Now, the peripherals of that might determine whether or not you're going to make a career out of it. If you make enough money, if you can advance enough, if your family will put up with it, you know, if you marry somebody that'll put up with you being in there or something like that. But the initial belief to I'm either going to be a cop or not be a cop is just like I'm going to be in the military or I'm not going to be in the military. You always knew you were going to be in the military, correct?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
You knew you were.
I feel like if you're going to go in to any kind of service industry for the money or for the power, you should be just declined at that point.
Maybe. But if you're, but also.
Yeah, I think if you go in, it's not immediate money. Like if you have to.
Right.
It's a long process and then you'll get out and you've built this reputation. Yeah. But then it's solid though.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, at some point, you got to make a living.
Yeah, you got to make
a living. No, but I'm saying if that's your intention on going in, not to actually serve, but with the intention of,
going to be a financial advisor, I want you to be in it for the money.
Yeah.
Because I want you to make me money.
I want to be, I'm going to be an accountant for law and order.
But besides that, any form of service that has to do with government service, I believe that from the lowest level to the highest level, if you don't have I said this before, honestly, one of my favorite books, I'm not touting the book here, but I'm going to a little bit, is the book Service, because you talk about a number of people in there and how they continue to serve, how they serve their community, how they serve their country, how they serve your service to others. There is no better feeling that exists than you helping out another human being.
Yeah, there's something that goes with it.
Yeah.
And it's different for everybody.
Yep.
And it's an actual thing.
Yeah.
It really exists.
When I was an air marshal, I can remember sitting there on the plane. And when people would get on the plane, and especially a lady, because again, I'm from Texas. I'm not being sexist. I'm just saying. A lady would come up and she'd be managing kids and bags and this, that, and other, and all this. And you get up, help her with their bag, put their bag up there.
Yeah.
Oh, man, I appreciate it. That feels good. It feels good to help other people out.
I mean, I am such a strong believer in just chivalry. Like, every man should have that. We went to a restaurant the other night. Marcus was in the car. And me and the kids were walking out. And this Addie was holding, my daughter, was holding the door open for me to come out. And this man just shoves his way through with his family while Addie's holding the door. And I'm like, what the heck are you doing? I'm not going to have my daughter holding the door open for you.
Something has started to turn in the world where people have become rude and where rudeness is accepted.
Mm-hmm.
And my personal belief is those people have not been punched in the mouth.
Yeah.
At no point in their life have they been punched in the mouth. Because if you get punched in the mouth, right, wrong, or indifferent, it lets you know that another human being can bring harm on you.
Yeah. I got one for the tech guys, like the FS, the billionaires. Mm-hmm. Kids brought this. Wedgies. You got to bring those back.
Oh, Marcus wants to give him wedgies.
If I run across that dude, his ass the guy is getting a power wedgie from hell.
It'll reset your hard drive.
I'm not kidding, man. Some of these freaking tech dudes, if they knew that was a thing.
I'm telling you. It'll reset
your hard
drive.
I'll jerk your shit so far up your ass, man. Yeah. You won't even want to mess. Just, dude.
You'd be singing soprano for the next 2 weeks.
That's why you don't get out of line, man.
That's so funny.
I want to beat your ass. I don't want to fight men. All right? I don't fight. That's all I fight is men. But you're not one of them. There's something else we can do to you.
There was always a pecking order. When I was growing up, and I know when you were growing up, there was always a pecking order. And that pecking order was created by... You were either smart, popular, strong, whatever, this, that, and other. But that pecking order was created by what you did.
Created by God.
Yeah.
That's where that comes from. I mean, that's an alpha list.
There's an alpha list. But even if you're not high up on that alpha list, if you're not 6'2" strapping warrior and this, that, and other, I don't care if you're the littlest person around. You can simply hold the door open for another person.
Yeah.
That is a form of service to help somebody out.
Yeah.
Help them out, man. Help out your fellow man. And in law enforcement, all you're doing is helping out your fellow man with the ability to take their freedom or, God forbid, their life if they're that far out of line.
Yeah.
But your job is just to help people.
Mm-hmm.
You're just helping people out, man. I mean, I'm telling you right now, I wouldn't do a firefighter's job.
Ah, oh.
I wouldn't. Running in a burning house? Nope, not my thing. Not my thing.
Are you kidding me?
I'll jump in moving water.
It's like
I'll
the
do
dude to
like
undo the bombs.
Yeah.
Like,
I mean, EOD.
Ugh.
Yeah. Dakota Meyer and I had that conversation. And I'm like, dude, why do you want to run in a burning house? You know, I'm like, I'm all about swift water rescue and this, that, and other. I'm all for that. Fire? Not
I think
for
Coda
me.
Told me, I was like, why do you want to do this? I was like, it's cool. No, it's not. It's hot. It's not cool.
It's not cool. It's hot.
All of our firefighter buddies do that. I hats off to them, man. If the house is on fire, I'm going to be out. I'll call you.
Yeah.
I'll call you, man.
That, you go, boy.
Yeah.
You go.
I'm cheering you on.
I'm going to have an air conditioner going in my car when you get back out of here. We'll wash you down, help you clean your gear.
The electricity dudes,
Yeah, I don't do much electricity either.
That's so funny.
Yeah, but that's their thing. I wouldn't do their job. You know, everybody looks, oh, man, how can you be a police officer nowadays? Man, how can you not?
Yeah.
It doesn't register with me how someone who wants to serve their community cannot at least consider law enforcement. Defunding the police is a portion of how we got where we are. When you take away money from the police, when you take money out of their budget, I can tell you the very first place it comes from, training.
Yeah.
And when you fail to train people as police officers, you get the frustration that brings out
the
animal
in people. Come out of.
Yeah. Well, you get what you're seeing now on the news.
Yeah.
These kind of
the first time somebody gets hit, it's completely different.
Yeah.
The police academy should be the toughest thing every day. You should get hit in the face, and you don't know who from. Like literally walking through the halls, going to class, you should be looking around the corner because somebody's going to smack you right in the grill.
Funny you should mention that because as a federal air marshal, that is an evolution of training.
You know
when you go in that at some point because as air marshals. We trained on airplanes, we trained on slide ramps, we trained in any kind of environment. But at some point in your training, you're going to be walking up the aircraft, going to put your bag up, whatever, and somebody's going to hit you right in your snot locker.
Oh my gosh.
I'm not talking about a tap either. I'm talking about they're going to take your feet off the ground and you got to fight through getting punched in the mouth because, you know, if you're going to do something nefarious, and there's some person that you suspect is in your way, you want to take that person out. You're going to have to learn to fight through it. But that, yeah, it's actually an evolutionary martial training. Awesome. Getting hit right in the mouth unexpectedly.
Oh, my gosh.
Completely unexpectedly.
Well, thank you so much for coming on. And we appreciate you and your service and your never quit story.
We're just getting started, too, man.
Yeah.
Right.
I love it.
Well, good luck. Thanks for having me.
Yeah.
That is it. Thank you, everybody, for listening in. We'll see you next week.